Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to begin with the flooding in the Mississippi, which is continuing, and the crest, which is expected to actually peak sometime later on this week, over the weekend. Yeah, depending on where you are. And it's expected to stay high, in some cases record levels, for as long as a week. Nearly 5,000 people have been displaced in this latest Mississippi River flooding. And when you think about displaced people, refugees, homes destroyed, you think about the faces of an inflexible bureaucracy, the difficulty of getting compensation from FEMA, the ease in some cases. We've, of course, heard stories of FEMA trailers that date from Katrina, but the problem of dealing with communities displaced by flooding and other disasters certainly didn't begin with Katrina, and it's not going to end with this flooding. But if you are a member of the community in the Mississippi Delta, you could do a lot worse than face the friendly face and voice of our next guest. Tanya Nelson is a resident of Magnaville. Tanya, good morning.
Good morning.
Magnaville's in Louisiana, right?
That is correct.
And if I'm displaced by the Mississippi flooding and come to Magnaville, the first person I'm going to meet is you, right?
Yes, you will.
And what are you going to tell me?
I'm going to tell you that it's going to be all right and that you're welcome to come to here at Magnaville. It's a safe place to live, friendly environment, and you're going to, you know, feel safe and shelter yourself here while the flood is going on.
And how many people from the latest Mississippi River flooding have you taken in so far there in Magnaville, Louisiana?
So far, we've taken in 27, well, we've occupied 27 homes. And in each home, there's about three more people in each home.
And you're expecting more before the end of this, right?
That is correct. We have 49 homes here, so maybe a little bit more people will be coming.
And any particular folks that you recall who remind you of your own experience and the circumstances of why you came to Magnaville?
Well, there was one lady, Miss Deborah Hewitt, that really reminded me of my experience. When she came, she was very emotional, crying. She had been all over trying to find a place to stay. She was able to get her things out of her home, but she didn't have any place to store them. And at the time, we didn't have a home available because we were still trying to get the next 10 ready. And when I was able to call her back in, and she was so thankful and crying, and it just reminded me of how I felt when I was going through this experience during Katrina.
Well, you may need compensation, you may need money, you may need a cooperative bureaucracy, but more than anything else, you need a friendly face when you're in that kind of a circumstance, wouldn't you say, Tanya?
Yes, I would.
Well, how long have you been in Magnaville?
I've been here since August of 2006.
And you came as a result of Katrina.
That's correct.
What is it, because you've got some experience here, you're probably one of the best experts we could talk to of the contemporary sort of situation for displaced people in American disasters. What is it that makes a displaced temporary housing facility like Magnaville not feel like a camp?
Well, it's just a beautiful environment. The landscaping, the neighbors, the people, just the environment itself, it makes it feel like a home. It's bigger than a FEMA trailer. It's a normal size home, so it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, front and back deck. So it's just like having your own home. It's on your own lot, so it's more than just a FEMA trailer. The environment, you're surrounded by oak trees and.
Sounds great. Tanya Nelson is a Magnaville resident since August of 2006. Shane Carmichael, what are the features of Magnaville that Tanya is describing that are unique, and how did this community come to be?
Well, Tanya has described it fairly well. When our chairman, Frank Stronach, started this initiative, he wanted to make sure that he created a space for people that felt like you had some peace and tranquility in a time of storm. So he bought a large piece of property with a beautiful set of oak trees and pecan trees and an old farmhouse and about 1,000 acres of land, and then laid it out in a design that had nice streets with streetlights, and each lot's about 1/4 acre, so people could feel like they had space. And I think that's the key thing of the vision of Magnaville.
Shane, it's not exactly a normal neighborhood, though. I mean, the normal neighborhood doesn't, you don't have to sign a contract, you don't have to take drug tests if they suspect you have drug use. And I know there was some concerns that Magnaville was more social engineering at some point than anything else. How has the community since Katrina and now moving into this new phase in sort of refugee protection, how has the community dealt with the whole contractual basis of living there?
Well, you know, when we designed it, it was really the theme of the initiative was a hand up, not a handout. So you could come into the home and you had to sign an agreement that we called a covenant of responsibility, which says you can stay here for 5 years rent-free if you use that time productively so that you could focus on getting a job or going to school or getting a training session or learning a new skill set so that at the end of the 5 years you could have some resources to move to the next level and set yourself back up where you want to be or wherever your career takes you. And so we had rules and regulations that made sure that space that I was talking about earlier stayed intact. And we had a number of things. So you couldn't be involved in drugs. You had to keep yourself clean of any wrongdoing in the community. You had to do 8 hours of community service wherever you chose to do it, whether it was at the church or at the local basketball. And that was really about getting you connected to the community. And so you had these type of rules in lieu of rent. And it made for a community that was very active socially.
And we're talking with Shane Carmichael, and you can hear his Canadian accent there. He's the manager of the Magnaville Project in Louisiana. He's speaking to us from Toronto, and it was a Canadian inspiration that created Magnaville. Tanya Nelson, before we go, anything Canadian about living there? Are you getting into, like, you become a hockey fan or anything over the last few years?
Oh, yeah, a hockey fan, yeah.
No kidding.
Mr. Shane keeps us up on all the hockey stuff. And
well, Tanya, before we go, how do you reconcile, explain to us how a community that's temporary can give some of the benefits of permanent residence?
Well, you take advantage of the facility and the neighbors, and you pull together and you work together and you make the best of the situation.
You expect to see some new families today?
Oh, yes. We have 3 more homes to fill of the 30, so I'm sure we will fill them today.
And Tanya Nelson, I know you got a milestone there in your own house.
Yes.
Tell us before we go.
She's getting ready to graduate, so I'm all excited about that.
Your daughter, what's her name?
Keontae Nelson.
Keontae, congratulations to her from Magnaville, Louisiana, a temporary community that sounds pretty permanent to me. Thanks, Tanya. Also, thanks to Shane Carmichael.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.